sitting on the sidelines waiting to buy a home until the market improves. Will it be a buyer's market this winter? Hi, I'm Rob West. Normally, November through February are the slowest months of the year for home sales, and that means buyers have more bargaining power. Will it happen this year? Dale Vermillion gives us his take on the market today, and then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, we're delighted to have Dale Vermillion with us today. He's the author of The Mortgage Maze, The Simple Truth About Financing Your Home. He's a great friend, and we always look forward to his time with us. Dale, great to have you back.
Always great to be with you, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, interest rates, as you know, are always a huge factor when folks are considering buying a house. We've, of course, seen major increases in the past year, but what's the trend right now? What are you seeing?
You know, we're actually seeing some good news for the first time in almost 2 months. Interest rates have actually dropped well over 0.5% in the last 3 weeks or so. And, you know, the thought for next year for 2024 is that we're going to continue to see some downward pressure on rates. We just saw inflation, of course, do better than we expected. Job numbers are coming in better than expected. So these things are all driving for better interest rates in the future. Don't think we're going to get anywhere in the threes and fours again.
Sure.
But we probably will get in the sixes again here sometime not too distant future.
Yeah, this American economy has proven to be pretty resilient, Dale. I mean, in the wake of these higher interest rates, obviously home prices holding up, the job market holding up. I mean, despite inflation and high interest rates, we're doing pretty well, aren't we?
We really are. You know, real estate is the center of our economy. It has been for a long, long time. And it tends to work to our benefit. And the biggest reason it really is staying strong right now is really population numbers, Rob, is really what it comes down to. We've got 168 million people in the Gen Y, Gen Z population, which is 35 million more than the two generations before. So that demand, you know, when you have high demand, you're going to really have opportunities to hold your economy pretty stable.
Yeah, let's talk about how that then is affecting home values. We, of course, have had a lack of inventory, keeping them propped up. You just referred to that, talking about the demand. Are you seeing prices moderating, Dale?
We are. We saw last month, we saw a 6.8% decrease in sales prices reported. I'm sorry, 6.8% of properties that were for sale had listings that were reduced and the value's gone down on those. That's good news because that's going to help affordability a little bit. But that still leaves 94% of homes that are selling at or above listing price.
Yeah.
We have seen property values go up about 3.1% year over year through the month of September. Median sales price about $369,000. So in all of this, you would expect to see, you know, we're not at a bubble. We don't see any of that happening. We do see values to stay, you know, continue to grow around a 3% rate for the next couple of years. But we do see some listing prices in certain regions and markets dropping that's going to help consumers in those markets.
Yeah. So folks sitting on the sideline thinking that we were in a bubble, we're certainly not seeing that play out at all. Might this actually be a good time, Dale, to buy a home if you're ready for it?
You know, it really is. And the reason is that, as I mentioned a moment ago, with the population numbers, the continued demand, we're going to continue to see property values go up, even if it's a little bit. A little bit is better than nothing. You know, if you're renting, you're getting no benefits whatsoever. Tax advantages are very strong because of the interest rates right now. That's going to create a lot of benefit to consumers. And look, when you start to add up what you're going to make back in appreciation, how your balance is going to drop, the asset wealth you're building, even at these higher rates, it really does make sense, especially when you consider there's a lot less buyers in the market right now. So much better chance of getting in a contract to a house If you wait until rates drop down in the fives or low sixes, now you're competing with 100 other buyers again, and we're back to bidding wars and all of those kind of things we don't want to see.
Yeah, that's really helpful. All right, Dale Vermillion with us today. He's the author of The Mortgage Maze, The Simple Truth About Financing Your Home. Dale's going to stick around for the next segment. We'd love to take your questions today. What are you thinking about related to mortgages, home purchases, buying or selling a home? Dale's here to weigh in on whatever you're thinking about. Lines are open. You can call right now, 800-525-7000. Your questions for Dale Vermillion in the next segment, 800-525-7000. You can get through right now, and we'll be right back on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Stick around.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. The cross of Christ was the place where everything met once and for all. Our sin and guilt met grace and forgiveness. Our weakness met the Lord's power. Our rebellion met the King of Kings who subdues his enemies. Our hatred met divine love. Psalm 85 adds, "Love and faithfulness meet together. Righteousness and peace kiss each other." When salvation arrives, all things come together and meet. We find all our hearts' deepest longings in the face of Jesus Christ, the only one who can take justice and mercy and give both to us without destroying us. In him we have salvation from our sin and salvation into a love that sends us out to a hurting and desperate world. Spend more time with Jesus. Visit GetAnchored.com.
Hey, Greg, I need some advice.
Oh, what's up?
I'm really struggling with finding ways to cut back. With costs going up, especially in healthcare, what do you guys do?
We use CHM, Christian Healthcare Ministries. It's a health cost sharing ministry that's been sharing members' eligible medical bills for over 40 years. Sure helped us stick to our budget. And here's the website, chministries.org. chministries.org.
Angels seem to be, in some special way, particularly geared to give instructions. And you know what? That's at the very core of who they are as individuals. Because what does the word angel mean? At its very basic core meaning is the word messenger.
Dr. David Jeremiah continues his series, Angels, Who They Are and How They Help, next time on Turning Point.
5:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from One Ascent Investments on the Faith and Finance program. They manage a comprehensive suite of value-based investment strategies designed to help Christian investors live aligned with what they value most. One Ascent believes that if your values inspire the way you live, they should also inspire the way you invest. This can be a unique form of worship. More information is available at investments.oneascent.com. That web address is investments.oneascent.com.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit NMLSConsumerAccess.org.
I'm so glad you've joined us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio, where we help you apply God's wisdom to your financial decisions and choices. You see, you and I are stewards, money managers for the King of Kings. That's a pretty high calling, so we want to look to the source, to God's Word, to apply His wisdom so we can manage His money wisely, obediently, faithfully. And that's what we want to do on this program each day. Today, in this portion of the broadcast, we're talking about home purchases, mortgages, everything related to the housing market. And we have just the guy for it. Dale Vermillion is our go-to related to mortgages and the housing market. He's the author of The Mortgage Maze, The Simple Truth About Financing Your Home. If you have a question about refinancing a home, maybe a home purchase, how to secure the right mortgage for you, maybe a home improvement project, or buying or selling a home, give us a call, 800-525-7000. We've got lines open. You can call right now, 800-525-7000. Let's go to the phones. Tim, what's your question for Dale today?
Yeah, a couple years ago, my wife and I sold a house and then bought a house, and we still have some money in savings that we've been trying to figure out how to do. We were planning to buy land and build, but that has not come to fruition. It was suggested to us to look into rental properties, and so wanted to see kind of what the thought is with that, some parameters that we should consider, and how we can make that decision wisely.
Yeah, it's a great question. I want to get Dale's take on it. But first, let me just ask, do you have, separate from this money, the proceeds from that sale, do you have an emergency fund of 3 to 6 months expenses?
Yes.
All right. And what about debt? Do you have any debt other than a primary home mortgage?
Just the primary home mortgage.
That's all you got. Okay. And are you saving for retirement in a company-sponsored plan?
Yes.
Okay, so this would truly be money that's beyond that. And so you're thinking, well, why not diversify into perhaps a rental property? Last question, have you ever done that before? Have you ever been a landlord in the past?
No.
Okay, very good. Dale, how do you help somebody process this decision, maybe their first purchase into a piece of property beyond the one that they're living in?
Yeah, well, first off, Tim, God bless you. Congratulations on having all your debt paid off and being in such a good financial position. I'm going to reference Proverbs 15:22 that says, plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. If you're going to go into rentals, and yes, it can be a very good investment if you get the right property at the right price in a good area where you're going to have good access to tenants. Again, demand is very high right now, so that's a good thing. And property values are going to continue to stay pretty strong, we believe. So for all those reasons, it's a sound decision. But here's what I would advise. Find a couple of people that you can use as counsel who've done that many times. You're going to learn so much from them on what it is that you need to look out for. Because being a landlord, to Rob's question,
yeah,
is a whole different frontier. You know, if you've never done that before, I mean, you need to understand how to pre-qualify people, how to clear their credit checks and make sure that, you know, you've got a company that's taking care of that property. If you can't do it yourself and you're figuring out to make sure that you've got a good break even and then a profit plan for that over time. So I would really seek counsel on that from people who can walk you through that. But in answer to your question, is that a sound investment vehicle? Absolutely, based on the fact that you've got all of your other things in line, and it sounds like you do.
Dale, let me ask you, you know, we typically say as a rule of thumb, go into your home purchase for your domicile with at least 20% down. Do you think that holds true for a rental property, or would you like to see that, you know, 30, 40, 50% equity?
30 to 50%. In fact, most lending programs, I mean, there are programs where you can get really low down payments. I prefer to see you put 30% down on that property, have a good amount of equity built into it. You've got the savings you're using. Let it work for you and create yourself a cushion for that. So
yeah,
that would be my recommendation in going into that.
Yeah, I think the key there, Tim, is you just got to make sure you're able to cover the debt service, especially with these higher interest rates, on top of setting something aside for home maintenance, on top of course, the insurance and the taxes and all of that, so that you truly are cash flowing this thing, at least at a break even, if not with some profit built in. Is that helpful, Tim?
Yeah, I think that's helpful. I think the other thing would just be, you know, if it looks pretty tight, what would be an alternative to buying an investment property at this point?
Yeah, are you putting 10 to 15% into that retirement plan at work, or what percentage do you have going in?
15.
Okay, great. Yeah, I mean, so you're on track there. I mean, I think, you know, continuing to build your passive investment strategy through stocks and bonds is, you know, really the most tried and true way. But, you know, real estate, I think, is a great way to diversify, as Dale said, as long as you do it wisely. Perhaps if you feel like you're not ready, maybe you continue to save and take advantage of these high interest rates right now. I mean, you're getting 5% plus in high yield savings while you're waiting. And maybe that gives you time to build up to get to that 30, 40, 50% down payment. So you're ready to go into your first rental property. Dale, any other thoughts?
No, that's great advice. And the other thought that I would have on top of that to remind you is, if you say you're doing a budget on this, it's very tight, you don't know if you can carry profit. First off, rental properties are a long-term play, just like long-term investments. So remember that. But
also remember that when you do that budget, there's always the unknown that you're going to have to deal with. So yeah. If you're already tight, there's a good chance you're going to be to the minus versus the plus because, you know, you can have renters who can damage properties and all kinds of things can come up that you don't expect. Again, that's why you want to seek good counsel on that.
Yeah, that's great. Tim, we appreciate your call today, my friend. Thanks for being on the program. Let's head to Maryland. Hi, Fran. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, thank you. My son has two houses. One he's trying to sell. The one he's paying mortgage on, $45,000 in mortgage. He's hoping to try maybe $60,000 to sell it, but it's gutted. His father had kind of messed it up when he rented it, so it needs a bathroom fix, the kitchen, and all that. It's a good house as far as it's brick. It's got a good rubber roof. It's in the city. We're in a depressed area, though, Cumberland. It's kind of depressed. But he's in a good side of town. So what would you suggest? He thought about renting it, but I think I just listened to your previous caller, and you said renting can be complicated, and since he owes two mortgages. And I was wondering if it's a good time for him to sell it. Yeah. It would have to be fixed up inside. So what would you be suggesting on that?
Yeah, there's a lot going on there, friend. So you said he has two homes that are both rentals. Is that right?
No. Other home has been vacant. He had a divorce. The other home is vacant. He's thinking about moving into that one maybe in the spring. But this one he's trying to sell quickly because he's losing money.
Okay, so let's focus on this house just for a moment that you're talking about. Did you say there's two mortgages on it?
No, he owes on $45,000 on it.
Okay, he owes $40,000. What do you think it's worth? Do you know?
About probably $60,000 or $70,000.
Okay.
And some people say 80 to 100, but
sure.
I'm hoping he can get 60 out of it at least.
All right. And then do you know how much he'd have to put into it to get it to where it's in good condition to rent it out?
Well, quite a bit. He'd have to put all the kitchen cabinets in. The water is messed up. He's got to do the plumbing. The bathrooms are real messed up. He had to replace stuff in the bathroom. It's gutted, really.
Sure. Yeah, Dale, obviously lot here but that we don't know, but we've got about 30 seconds. What counsel would you give to Fran to pass to her son?
I'd probably sell it. I'd get out from running those mortgages, get rid of that debt, put that money into a better earning account, and let somebody who does it for a living do all those repairs.
Yeah, that's great advice, Fran. I think, you know, in a situation like this, unless he's really handy and this is a project he wants to take on, just finding a realtor to help him, you know, get his money out and move this into a property that he could actually turn into cash flow, I think probably makes some sense. But getting wise professional counsel at this point is really the next step. Thanks for your call. We'll be right back with Dale Vermillion on Faith and Finance. Stick around.
What we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source.
The God Who Speaks, the award-winning documentary from the American Family Association, is now available in a special limited edition DVD set. This release includes a Sunday school curriculum and 2 hours of additional footage. Go to thegodwhospeaks.org to get your copy today. thegodwhospeaks.org.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
Sometimes it can be hard to catch each live broadcast. This could be due to your job, school, or just life in general. We understand, which is why you don't have to miss out. The AFR podcast page is where you can find all of your favorite shows. Whether it's old or new, you can listen and download each broadcast that you've missed, including the ones you've already heard. Just visit the podcast page at afr.net.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at EventideInvestments.com. That's EventideInvestments.com.
This year has just flown by. I know. It's already November. As this year comes to a close, the AFA Foundation would like to invite you to make a planned gift to American Family Association. Consider the many ways your planned gift can help restore a biblical worldview in our nation, as well as bring financial stability to your family. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit our website at afafoundation.net.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
I'm so thankful you're joining us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. With me today, my good friend Dale Vermillion. Dale is the author of The Mortgage Maze, The Simple Truth About Financing Your Home. He's our go-to guy for mortgages and the housing market. We're taking your questions in this segment on housing-related topics and mortgages, 800-525-7000. We've got some lines open. Before we head back to the phones, Dale, for those folks who are planning on a home renovation project, they were planning to borrow to do it. They've got the cash flow to support it. In the past, we had said, why don't you get a home equity loan, not a line of credit, to have that fixed low interest rate? Obviously, with rates much higher, would you push folks toward a home equity line of credit now so they can ride these interest rates down, or how would you approach that?
Well, you know, the home equity lines are also going to be at pretty high rates because they're tied to generally prime, the prime rate. It's prime plus something, depending on what they're using, or it could be another indicator. But here's my concern always about a line of credit is unless you are very disciplined from a credit standpoint and from a usage standpoint, it can be an incredibly dangerous tool because you're going to get a line of credit, for example, for $100,000 because they're going to give you the maximum based on what you qualify for, yeah. Although you might only need $25,000 for the home. And people tend to, when that extra money's there, they tend to say, well, why not do this and add that? And maybe we'll go buy this. And pretty yeah. soon you've got a $75,000 line of credit that's out of control. Where if you get a loan, now you have to figure for exactly what you need. It puts a fixed amount to the money. It puts a fixed interest rate. Remember, HELOCs, generally home equity line of credits, are variable in their rate structure. They change consistently. And, you know, they don't really have any term on them. They're an open-ended term that's based on a 10-year amortization totally. So I would always lean towards the home equity loan as the better alternative unless you have incredible discipline and you can control yourself from using that line of credit.
Yeah, that's well said. Thanks for that, Dale. All right, back to the phones to North Carolina. Hey, Angela, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, good morning.
Hi.
Thank you so much for your ministry. It's a blessing to so many of us, and we appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I am calling my son-in-law, military, PCS to San Antonio, and purchased a home at the end of June. Unfortunately, around the beginning of September, there were cracks and in the house, on the walls, the floors. And I'm just trying to find out maybe a source, a help. What can they do?
Yeah, Dale, obviously this is not something anyone wants to find, especially right after buying a home.
No.
Where would you go from here?
Well, the first thing I would do is I would look back and make sure that if there was an inspection done at the time of the purchase, because that isn't that long ago, I would look and see if there was any indication of that in there to make sure that there's not some kind of liability on the part of that. Second, I would look and see if you have any kind of a homeowner warranty. Sometimes you have those when you purchase a home, and if that's the case, you may be able to file a claim on that. Outside of that, if you know, let's say they didn't have an inspection and you don't have a warranty, you know, now you're probably just having to deal with fine contractors and get some different bids so that you can get the best deal on it. I don't know that there's any recourse that you have, particularly if you bought it as is. You know, when you buy it as is, that's what you're doing. You're buying as is. So I would look back at your paperwork from when he purchased the home
and just make sure that there wasn't anything that was left out or anything that was overlooked that should not have been overlooked that you have a claim on.
Yeah, I think that's great counsel. I would say also make sure you get at least three bids. There is so much discrepancy in this area. You know, some folks, you know, could come back $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, whereas somebody else may have a way to do it for 10, you know, so you definitely want to get a number of contractors in there. Obviously you want them all to be reputable with good reviews, but you definitely want to get more than one. Angela, sorry to hear about that situation, but appreciate you calling today. To Iowa. Hi, John. What's your question for Dale Vermillion?
Good morning. I got a question about reverse mortgages.
All right.
Kind of wondering on where the companies come up with the number that they say your house is either worth or what they're going to give you. Are they going by an assessor's value? Or are they looking at comparables and that type of thing? And
yeah.
I know that, you know, you have to, you know, keep up with the taxes, insurance, all that, and the maintenance. But, I mean, again, you know, when it comes time to leave, I mean, are they looking, oh, hey, your furnace is 20 years old. We're going to book you. We're going to bill you for a new furnace before we, you know, finish you off, or how's that all work?
Yeah, Dale, your thoughts?
Well, in the reverse mortgage market, they use the same kind of ratios that you use in the typical mortgage market. It's called a loan-to-value ratio, where it's based on a percentage of the value. I think the last time I looked, reverse mortgages, you're probably looking at about a 35% loan-to-value ratio. So in other words, you can only get your loan up to 65% of the value of the home is typically where you're going to see. And then once you do that, yes, you can have an escrow set up. If you don't have an escrow set up for tax insurance, you're going to have to make sure you maintain those because they'll be notified of that. They generally are going to require that. But I'm not aware of any situations where they've come back at the end and looked at things like, you know, roofs, water softeners, furnaces, whatever. It's just like any other mortgage. They're betting on the front end that if for some reason they have to take that property back, they've got enough equity into it to cover all of those things. If you end up selling it, then you just get your money like you normally would, and your descendants are going to get whatever portions you want them to have. So a reverse mortgage can be a great thing for the right kind of candidate, where you're on a fixed or a very limited income, you've got a ton of equity, and you want to use it to build a stream of income. But again, you're going to stay conservative on how much you're going to go on that, and the lender's going to make sure that that happens.
Yeah, that's well said, John. I mean, basically, the market value is likely going to be determined by an appraisal with a a registered appraiser who's coming in and establishing the value of that home, and then they'll loan against it. So hopefully that answers all of your questions. We appreciate you being on the program today, sir. Call back anytime. Well, Dale, always love to have you, my friend. Thanks for stopping by today. We'll look forward to having you back real soon.
Thank you, Rob. Love you. God bless you. We'll see you soon.
Love you too, buddy. That's Dale Vermillion, author of The Mortgage Maze. A quick break when we come back. More of your financial questions on any topic. Call now, 800-525-7000. We'll be right back.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. soundmindinvesting.org.
Are you searching for a way to become a better, faithful steward of the resources that God has given you? Well, download the FaithFi app and join the 37,000 others who are already using our app. The FaithFi app will provide you with wisdom, community, and simply help you stay on track with your finances. We have 3 money management options to choose from, so find an option that fits your unique needs. It's available on desktop or mobile. Simply go to faithfi.com and click app to get started.
What does the American Family Association stand for?
AFA upholds the truth that all human beings, including the unborn, are created in the image of God and are worthy of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
My name is Kent, and I'm a member of Christian Healthcare Ministries. I have a friend who actually has great insurance, and she recently had a life-threatening experience. And she was laying in the hospital bed afraid, not afraid for her life, but afraid of what her insurance would or would not cover. And as a CHM member, I can honestly say I just never have that fear. I can't tell you the peace of mind that provides.
Learn more about Christian Healthcare Ministries biblical cost sharing at chministries.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
I'm so thankful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. Looks like all the lines are full. If you get a busy signal, just keep trying. We'd love to get your question on today. We'll get to as many as we can. 800-525-7000. Let's go to New York. Hi, Chuck. Thanks for your patience. How can I help, sir?
Gentlemen. Hey, quick question. I have most of my retirement money with a financial investor, and he has probably half in bonds and the other half are in, I think, mutual funds. I don't even pay much attention because he's a friend of a friend, so I trust him.
All right.
I've got a friend that I have not known for that long, and I'm not sure I quite trust her, but she's pressuring me to invest in Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, and I don't know much about that. And I've heard that to do like 5 or 10% of that, she's trying to get me to transfer the whole thing. So I just wonder what your thoughts were on cryptocurrency and Bitcoin, because I know nothing about them.
Yeah, well, I think that last statement you just made there is the answer, because I would say if you can't explain something to your mom, don't invest in it. It's just kind of my rule of thumb. You know, there's the biblical approach to growing God's money is akin to steady plodding is the term that God's word uses. And these highly speculative investments, I think, you know, for most folks really don't have a place. Now, if you were to say, listen, I understand the risk, I understand what I'm getting into, and I want to take 5% of my portfolio and put it into something that has the ability to, you know, grow dramatically, even though I could lose it all, you know, I would be comfortable with that. I probably wouldn't go over that. But I think for most folks, this is just not an area to invest in. Crypto is not going away. It's going to be used for all sorts of things, even beyond just a currency exchange. But in terms of an investment, it's kind of the wild, wild west. I mean, think the dot-com before the bubble burst, you know, where any company adding dot-com to their name, their stock went through the roof. And, you know, we still have so many questions about how is it going to be used and how are the central banks going to regulate it and which are going to be the winners and losers. I mean, obviously, Bitcoin is the biggest and strongest. It's probably the one that will succeed. But especially when you get beyond that, you know, there's going to be some that will just go away and completely fold. So I would personally stay away from it. And I think the key there is just your thought that, hey, I don't understand this. Well, if you don't understand it, why would you invest in it? But again, if you're relying on somebody else's expertise, that's okay. But I would still put this in the most speculative risk category. And because of that, I would either say stay away from it or don't go above 5%. Does that make sense?
That was my thinking. I just wanted to, you know, get that one.
Absolutely. Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Chuck. Call anytime. God bless you, sir. Let's go to Ray, our next caller. Go ahead.
Good morning, Rob. Thank you for your call. Thank you for letting me on.
Yes.
I'm 66 years old, and I'm starting to think about 72, where the federal government requires me to take out money from my 401k, RMD. is that going to be enough? And basically that's all I needed to know.
Yeah. Very good. You know, a couple of thoughts here. Number one is that required minimum age is continuing to increase. And so come 2024, it's going to be up at 73. It's ultimately headed toward 75 in 2033. You'll obviously hit it before it gets there. But you still have a number of years before you're going to have to take a required minimum. So in your case, you're really just looking at elective withdrawals that you're taking for specific purposes, in this case, to buy a home. You know, is 20% going to be enough? It really just depends on what your adjusted gross income is, you know, and what tax bracket you fall into. And so I would, you know, probably look to connect with a CPA just to help him or, you know, have the CPA help you figure out where you fall. You know, most folks, if you make under $200,000, you're probably in the, you know, somewhere in the 22 to 24% bracket, obviously before deductions and so forth. But so that 20% is just kind of a good starting point for folks. If you do overpay, yeah, absolutely. It'd be like, you know, you any kind of tax withholding that you have. It's an anticipated or expected withholding based on what you think you'll owe. If you end up owing less than that when you file your return, the government will give it back to you. You would have, in effect, given them a tax, an interest-free loan. If, obviously, you owe more, then you would have to write a check at tax time. But I think that 20% is just a good kind of starting point for most folks. And, you know, with where the tax rates are now, between now and 2025, when the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expires and the rates will go back up, that 20% is a pretty good number for most folks after they take out the standard deduction and so forth. So I think you're probably good there. I think the only consideration would be if you're taking a significant sum of money, number one, is that the right thing to do? Are there any other ways to do it without pulling that money out of your 401k? Because the purpose of that money is to continue to grow and compound. So you've got it, you know, in retirement to generate income. And obviously, as it comes out, it's gone. It can't continue to grow, especially in a down market like we're in now. You're locking in some of those unrealized losses. But the other consideration is just whether you should spread it out over two tax years. And that's something your CPA could weigh in on to make sure that, you know, let's say you needed $100,000, rather than adding $100,000 to your taxable income in 1 year, you could take $50,000 in this year and $50,000 in next year, and that may keep it in a lower tax bracket. So that would just be something to talk to a tax professional about. Does that all make sense?
It does make sense. I was under the impression that any money coming out of 401k wasn't required income, and I didn't think that was going to factor in with your total income.
No, as you take money out of a tax-deferred vehicle, 401k, IRA, SEP IRA, 457, that money went in pre-tax. It comes out federally taxable. So whatever you withdraw is going to be added to your taxable income for the year of in the year of the distribution.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Ray. We appreciate you being on the program, sir. May the Lord bless you. Let's see. Quickly to Virginia. Hi, Louise. How can I help?
Yes, sir. Praise the Lord. I'm a homeowner, and I'd like to know whether I'm selling my house, and should I use the equity in that house enough, or should I get another type of loan? In other words, what's the best type?
Are you talking about for repairs prior to selling?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Here's my advice on that, Louise. You know, when you're making repairs or renovations because it's a home you're going to live in, you approach it differently than when you're about to sell. So what you want to do is find a real estate professional, somebody who probably specializes in your area of town, somebody who you know well or somebody else can refer to you, and get that person to walk through the home with you, go over the things you think need to be done, and let them tell you which things you should do and which you shouldn't. Some things you don't want to do right before selling because you're not going to get the money back out. And then I would look at probably taking a home equity loan to get that done, but only for those things that the real estate professional tells you make sense prior to that sale. Thanks for your call, Louise. We appreciate it. Back with more right after this. Stay with us.
Here's Pastor Jeff Shreve with From His Heart Ministries. Think how different your life would be if you really believed that you, little old you, were a person whom Jesus loves. You let that settle in your heart and it blows you away every time you think about it. Wow.
Discover how to have a life that really matters. Join Pastor Jeff Shreve on From His Heart, weeknights at 6 Central, here on American Family Radio. Today's issues.
Blaming a gun for a violent crime or a murder is like blaming the pencil for a misspelled word.
Ooh, I like that.
That would be like a student who he does terrible on spelling, and he says,
we've had a rash of pencil-oriented mistakes.
Misspell words.
Today's issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
What's most important to you when it comes to choosing your financial advisor? Someone who's aligned with your biblical values? How about someone who will take the time to explain your options? Certified Kingdom Advisors are professionals who meet high standards in competence and integrity, and have been trained to offer biblical financial advice. To find a Certified Kingdom Advisor in your area, visit faithfi.com and click Find a CKA.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
I'm so thankful you're joining us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. Well, in this final segment of the broadcast today, we have a chance to talk about one of my favorite giving opportunities here at the end of the year. It's Operation Christmas Child from our friends at Samaritan's Purse. You've heard about it. Since 1993, over 209 million shoebox gifts have been collected for children in over 170 countries and territories. These are shoeboxes with a gift that's an opportunity to share the love of Jesus Christ with a child in some part of the world. And this is National Collection Week. That's right, November 13th to the 20th. So this is the time for you to go to samaritanspurse.org/OCC to learn about it, to start packing your shoebox so you can drop it off at one of the 4,500 locations nationwide. And here at American Family Radio, we're delighted to partner with Samaritan's Purse to bring awareness to this incredible ministry opportunity. And I'm delighted that we're joined today by Evangeline Franzen. Evangeline was born in the Philippines, and she actually had the opportunity as a child to receive one of these shoeboxes. Evangeline, thanks for being with us.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
I'm so delighted you're with us today. Well, I want to talk about when you received the shoebox, but first, take us back and help our listeners understand a bit about what your life was like as a child living in the Philippines.
Yes, of course. My name is Evangeline Franzen, and I grew up in Cebu, Philippines. I grew up near a dump site where it's you know, we know dump site is like mountains of trash and just this beautiful island in Cebu, Philippines. But in the middle of the island is this huge dump site where all the waste materials from beach resorts, actually we have the second largest international airport in the island. Wow. And imagine those waste materials would be dumped in the dump site. And so it's beautiful, but it's, you know, there's a dump site in the middle of it. And so that was like part of my childhood memories, smoke coming up from it every second of the day, black smoke. And my family, we were really poor. My dad wasn't around much. And so my mom had to go to the dump site to look for things to sell so we can buy food for dinner, for breakfast and lunch. And sometimes we don't have food to eat. And so my mom would just ask us for children to go to bed hungry. And so that was basically part of my childhood memories, and that's where I grew up.
That's heartbreaking to hear your story. I know God met you there, but before we get to that, tell us a little bit about just the care that you provided for your siblings, because while your mom was out really trying to find a way to feed the family, you were really caring for the young ones, right?
Yes. So I am the second in the family, and at that time, my mom had to take care of four children on her own, so when my mom and my older brother go to the dump site, I babysit my two younger siblings. And so they would go to the dump site, and I would take care of my two younger siblings. And my older brother and I skip school a lot because sometimes we do not have food, and sometimes, you know, mom needs help. So that was kind of like my job to make sure that the two younger siblings were taken care of. And sometimes, you know, that was just like the life that we yes. were part of at that year. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, at some point along the way, your life intersects with this incredible ministry of Samaritan's Purse, Operation Christmas Child. Take us to that day that you got your shoebox.
Yeah, so every Saturday there's this feeding program by a church at the dump site. And so my younger sister specifically would go to this feeding program. And Samaritan's Purse, Operation Christmas Child, came to the church around Christmas. And so because I was there with my younger siblings, they asked everybody to form a line. And so we were, like, in line. They asked our ages and our names. And I remember I was so excited because as a 13-year-old at that time, I've never received a gift. And so when it was our turn to give them our names, I told them my sister's name first and my younger brother at that time. And when it was my turn, they actually looked at me, and they told me no to receive the shoebox, because if you see me in person, I'm actually tall for a Filipino. Most of the Filipino, very short and really tiny, and as a 13-year-old, I was pretty tall, and so they thought that my two younger siblings were my kids. And they asked me to help them distribute the shoeboxes to the kids as well, and towards the end of the distribution, one of the Operation Christmas Child volunteer tapped me on the shoulder and handed me my own shoebox. And it was just an amazing feeling because that was my first gift ever. And
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. Was there one particular item in there that maybe stood out to you that you can remember today?
Yes. So when I opened my shoebox, there were school supplies, and one of the items that I really remember up to this day was this pink glittery notebook that I wished I kept when I moved here in the States. I did not remember bringing that notebook, but that was my favorite item. And also when I received my shoebox, it was the same year that I accepted Jesus in my heart, it really solidified my relationship with my Heavenly Father, a Father that would never leave me nor forsake me, unlike my earthly father. So, you know, when we got the shoeboxes, my siblings and I, we were just so loved and cared for, and knowing that that was the first gift we've ever received, and it was around Christmas. It was really incredible.
Wow. And so this really was just your understanding that God loved you and your siblings and that he was watching over you. That's so powerful, Evangeline. Now, you and your husband live here in the United States in Kansas now. You're raising your two children, and you're on the other side of this ministry now. You actually get to pack shoeboxes for other children, right? What does that mean to you?
It means so much to me because I did not even realize that Samaritan's Purse, Operation Christmas Child, is based here in the U.S. And doing what I do now, packing for other children, it's just that incredible feeling of realizing that this shoebox would go to the hands of so many children around the world like me, who grew up in poverty, who probably does not know their father, who probably does not know Jesus, and for them to have the opportunity to know Jesus and know that they're cared and loved, it's just an incredible feeling because I've been in that situation. And so as you could imagine, I've been, traveling for OCC, sharing my story, but also when I travel, I'm always grateful for the privilege and the opportunity to encourage people to pack shoeboxes for these children because it's just an amazing ministry. So
There's no doubt that it is. For somebody out there who's already decided, I'm going to do my own shoebox this year, or maybe I'm going to do several of them with the family, what are some of your favorite items to pack, having been on the other side of this, that might be an encouragement to our listeners?
Yes. So when I received my shoebox, I personally got the school supplies. So you cannot go wrong with school supplies. Some of these children are not able to go to school because they can't even afford to get pencil or notebook. And so I always tell people when I get the question, pack school supplies, no matter what age you choose to pack, school supplies are the best to put in a shoebox. And personal hygiene items, the soap, the washcloths, the toothbrush. For some children here, specifically my kids, didn't even think about it, but it's such an amazing stuff, like gifts to the children that could not afford those items. So school supplies and personal hygiene items are the best gifts or materials that you could put in a shoebox.
I love that. All right. We're just about out of time, but I want to give you the opportunity before we wrap up today just to challenge our listeners. What would you like to tell them as they consider partnering with Samaritan's Purse for Operation Christmas Child?
Yes. When I receive my shoebox, the gospel opportunity, the greatest journey that is part of the program now, were not available at the moment I got my shoebox, and it really impacted my life. And I just want to challenge our listeners today that when you pack a shoebox, think of a face of a child, because when they receive the shoebox now, they're able to go back and attend a 12-week discipleship program where they're able to learn Jesus, where they get to know their Heavenly Father. And to me, that's just an incredible moment for each child. And so when you pack a shoebox, please, please think about a face of a child, and also you become a missionary when you pack a shoebox. So
yes.
I think a lot of people does not even realize that they become a missionary when they pack a shoebox, because they get to share the gospel to these children around the world.
Oh, it's so incredible. Well, Evangeline, thank you for sharing your story with us today, and thank you for challenging our listeners. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. God bless you. That's Evangeline Franzon. She's with Operation Christmas Child and Samaritan's Purse. Folks, you heard it. This is your opportunity to be the hands and feet of Jesus, to be on mission by packing a shoebox, perhaps getting the whole family involved. This is National Collection Week. There's 4,500 locations, and you can get all the details at samaritanspurse.org/OCC. That's samaritanspurse.org/OCC. Well, on behalf of my team today, Robert Youngblood, Jim Henry, and Devin Patrick, I'm Rob West. This has been Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.